What was our relationship? What were they doing 3 years before that event? And what was I doing 3 years before that event? And what was our relationship? What were they doing 4 years before that event? What was I doing 4 years before that event? What was our relationship? What were they doing 10 years before that event? What was I doing 10 years before that event? What was our relationship? What were they doing 15 years before that event? What was I doing 15 years before that event? What was our relationship? What were they doing 20 years before that event? What was I doing 20 years before that event? What was our relationship? What were they doing when they were an infant? What was I doing when I was an infant? What was our relationship? What were they doing when they were in the womb? What was I doing when I was in the womb? What was our relationship? Now you allow both those figures to dissolve into light. The light is absorbed into you, through the top of your head, down into your heart. Now you allow yourself to be present in this room again. And you look back, do a quick review of where you, be interested in all of it, be interested in what memories came up, also be interested in where your mind did not want to go, where you just went on a holiday. Don't ignore that. That's a very interesting thing when the mind goes on a holiday. Ask, oh, why did I go on a holiday? And then leave it. Don't go poking, okay? Was there a different feeling in the beginning between the enemy and the friend? Was there a different feeling at the end between the enemy and the friend? For some people, you can hang on to it a little better, but if you do the meditation fully, in the center you have, I'm going to try to fit something else in here so we're not doing it fully. In the center you have a neutral person One of those people you were talking about, you know. One of those people you like to keep neutral. You don't have any particular personal, you know, like somebody who lives across town at a corner store you occasionally go to. Hi, how are you today? Oh, that's fine. No, see you later. Bye. They're in the center. No, in the center. So you do the friend, you do the enemy, and you do the neutral person. You do them each the same, exactly the same. Sometimes the neutral person becomes the most interesting of the three. Did you choose figures, or were you surprised by who came up?
For the
friend and the enemy.
For the enemy, I chose a person, and then I changed my mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Isn't that curious? Yeah. You did that too.
It's like 3 weeks down. Yeah.
Isn't that curious? Isn't that curious? But then you didn't have any problem remembering, did you? Isn't that just curious? Isn't the mind a wonderful thing? Did you? It's very curious. Just step into your own consciousness and it's a magical mystery tour. I mean, who are you, anyway?
And with the friend, it just seems so many times come up when I didn't know what was going on in their life and didn't feel like I'd been a friend at all. But the tie was still there, but it was pretty flimsy.
It was one that you were clinging to rather than there?
No, it was a separation, I guess, and distance.
Not knowing each other. Did you know each other from in the womb?
Oh, no.
So, like I'm saying, you know, you notice that you keep taking this back. One of the things that is almost never practiced anymore, but was very much a part of the Buddhist tradition, was when someone had some meditation experience of depth calm, then a group of people would go away into a forest retreat, and they would trace back memories, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, to birth, into the womb, to conception, and back. And that was what was part of the discipline of the order. To trace the many, many ways that self has been formed. Because who you are habitually thinking of yourself as today, the habits will change in the next circumstance. And another self you will be habitually thinking of, you, identifying, possessing. But you won't even notice. Because the sense of an eye stays the same. Even when different eyes flash through, it's still I. I am happy, I am sad. But that's not true. It is always different. It isn't rain. It's raining. It's selfing. What is the selfing made of now? Is there more drops here, fewer there? A little warm here, a little cool there. It's very interesting, isn't it? When you swoon out, is because you don't want to know who you are? It's interesting. Refuse to play. I'm taking my marbles and I'm going home. Swoon. Oh, this is a game I'll play. I'm back. Mind the gap. B be really interested in that gap. What? When you gap out. Like you're telling me all about your tie with your friend. And I'm looking at you and saying, oh really? You attached to that, are you? What about before there was the tie? Which you're not talking about. And you're not talking about the enemy. Mind the gap. Mind what you don't like going into. Bring a mind into it. Be conscious in it. You don't have to change your preferences. You just have to be aware. Don't swoon out. Life's too short. You never know when a truck will hit you. Take it from me. You never know. You just feel like you're immortal. A little brain tumor here, a little leprosy there. You just don't know. You just don't know. So that sense of self is dangerous.
What about the essential self, the supposed the soul, or, you know, what you're born
with? I'm a Buddhist. I'm a Buddhist. From a Buddhist perspective, it's a really nice idea. It's not my experience. It is really not my experience. I really have other experiences. It's not conceptual. There is a desire to be a self. I recognize it really clearly. I say, hello, my name is Cecily. Just as if it were. But it changes all the time. There is a desire, that's what I mean by like stainless steel, you know, like a little ball bearing that can move through the intestines and come out. You swallow, it comes all the way out. Can move through all the vicissitudes of life and come out still shining clean, still immaculate, untouched. It's not my experience. But many people have that as a belief. Many people use the teaching of Buddhism without any problem. And no problem for Buddhists either, without being Buddhist, because Buddhism is non-theistic. That means no subject, no object. There is no creator God in Buddhism, because there's no beginning. So you say, from the very no beginning. Yeah? Oh, I never said that, no. Oh no, what is called the self is made of three things, I said. What did I say? Present supporting circumstances, because a lawyer who's arguing a case in court and a lawyer making love that night with a few drinks of wine is not the same person. Are they? Mm-hmm. They are the same person? Really? Yeah, I'm looking at it. Doesn't look the same to me. It does not have a fixed identity. I fix its function as its identity because I want a glass. If I want a shower, it changes totally. Doesn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. Now it's an elbow rest.
It's still made of glass and it's still glassy.
It's made of a lot of things besides glass. It's made of space. You know, it's made of a lot of things. You could have a whole history about this glass from its trademark. You could have a chemical analysis of this glass. You could use it as a way to cut through other glass. I have to encourage myself.
I'm just actually stubborn about it, and I'm not sure why.
No, and that's fine. And that's fine. And that's what I'm saying. That I'm telling you with my full heart, I am a Buddhist. And Buddhism is a non-theistic religion. I was at a conference in Canada a month and a half ago, just over 6 weeks ago. It's called the North American Interfaith Network. It was their 10th anniversary conference. I was asked to take part in a panel. There were six of us in this panel. There was an Aboriginal from North America, all women. There was Hindu. There was a Buddhist. There was a Jew. There was a Christian. And there was a Muslim. The topic was rediscovering the gift of the universal feminine through faith, scripture, and myth. We each had 10 minutes to address this. It was quite, I loved it. It was a great exercise. And the conference was so exciting. It was such a joy to be there. These wonderful-hearted people, intelligent people, most of them were pretty intelligent. They weren't your average crowd of people. Most of them were up the upper range of their religious groups, who had a powerful desire to bridge between differences without losing their own sense of belief. It was so exciting. It was so exciting to be in a group of about 700 people, 600 people, who were there because they believed in interfaith dialogue. And that was the whole purpose of it. At various times, I would get into a conversation with a person here or a person there, and then they would say to me something, and then they would ask me what my religious tradition was. I would say, I'm a practicing Buddhist. They would say, oh, well, we all have the same belief in God. And I'd say, well, no, you know, not actually. Because Buddhism is non-theistic. And they turn around. They swoon. They turn around and start talking to the person next to them. Just like, no, not actually, because Buddhism is non-theistic. Just like that. So there's this banquet. I'm sitting at the banquet. There's a chair empty next to me. This woman comes and sits there, and we're talking. She's one of the organizers. She's been involved with organizing the very first of the NANE conferences. This is number 10. This is her passion, her life. She is really interested in interfaith dialogue. They have these all over the world. So every year they have it in a different place. And they do have them all over the world, mostly in North America. Sorry. Okay. She says to me, How are you finding the conference? I say, it's my first one. This is just amazing. It's wonderful. I tell her some of the excitement and the joy I feel about being there, the inspiration that many of the people I'm meeting, you know, they're really wonderful. She says to me, what don't you like about it? I said, well, dislike would be too strong a word. But I find it really interesting that no one knows how to speak to someone who is non-theistic. And she goes... and she's talking, and I go, there you go. And then after about 5 minutes, she turns back. And she says, I don't believe it. You can be religious and non-theistic. And I said, yeah, That's right. That's right, you don't believe that. That's fine. It doesn't mean I don't. So this is interesting. There's very, Buddhism is very straightforward. Buddhism says nothing arises without cause. That already sounds like a creator, doesn't it? But it's not. Whatever is causal, whatever arises, is conditioned and therefore impermanent. A creator can't be impermanent. And there is no fixed self to which things happen. Because there is no separateness from everything. Because there is no separateness. It is non-duality. There's non-duality. Buddha was the guy who figured out how to say it this time. There are Buddhas every how many Buddhas are there? There are a whole bunch of Buddhas. There are lots of them. They happen. It takes 3 years to become a Buddha, to become a Sama. Three kalpas to become a Sama Sambuddhasa. A Sama Sambuddhasa. There, in a grand kalpa, which is more, one kalpa is 320 million years. So it takes three of those cycles to become a Buddha, like Shakyamuni Buddha was. In a grand kalpa, which is an great amount of time, there can be, you know, a Buddha every 5,000 kalpas, 5,000 mini kalpas, quarters of the 320 kalpas. There's different kinds of kalpas. So, and they usually arise all in one part of the kalpa. There is the beginning of a kalpa, which is like a little too confused, the consciousness hasn't settled into an existence, and there's no point in being a Buddha because nobody's going to listen anyway. Then there's the middle of a kalpa, which is a really good time, which is what we're living in. This is considered, from a Buddhist point of view and a Hindu point of view, to be a very fortunate time. Because teachers have been present within living memory. So the last teacher was not around so that you and I could phone him up and say, hey, Shakya, what you doing, baby? But there are oral traditions and living traditions, and there are masters in many religions who are around. Teachers are being born. And there are occasional great teachers. And there is even, from a Buddhist point of view, a Buddha. And how did this Buddha come? Through causes. Nothing arises without cause. It's so sweet. Anyway, so it takes three kalpas. And you have to be prophesied that that's what you're going to do. Some Buddha has to see that that's where you're going to go. From the time of a prophecy of some previous Buddha saying, yeah, I think you got, you know, we'll put you down on the list of potential future Buddhas. I think you're going to do it. You know? Then it takes three kalpas from that prophecy. So this could be a few lifetimes, which is why I'm planning one at least as a country and Western singer. And one I'll spend with studying clouds. You know, I figure I'll be, you know, so I've got a few worked out to sort of holiday well meditating, you know. It's hard to decide between country and Western and opera. See, it's a question between food and sex in my mind, but that's my, that's my conditioned view, so. Probably opera singers have sex, I mean. Just my view. Anyway, where was I? Oh yeah, 320 kalpas. Three kalpas from the time you prophesied. From the time of a prophecy. So, this means only that in order to, and when the Buddha began to teach, when he had the insight that changed his consciousness from being one that clung to relationship and self as reality, to one that was individual rising out of totality, rather than totality riding the waves and trying to maintain a separateness from, or individuality trying to maintain a separateness from being swallowed up by totality, but rather than that individual continuously born out of totality, right? So that the speech was the speech of totality, which is Sammasambuddhassa. Are you sort of vaguely following what I'm saying? Yeah, okay. So when he experienced how that should happen, he basically figured it was too simple. Nobody would understand him. Nobody would understand what he was saying, because he was saying, first of all, there is suffering. And most people wanted to say, and so what do we do with it? How do we get out of it? And he is not saying that. And Buddhism does not say that. Buddhism says there is dissatisfaction. There is inconvenience. There is pain. It is impossible to be perfect. There is no perfect stainless self. Why? Because the entire of the manifest is continuously coming into being, existing, and passing away. It is process, not attainment. The attainment is in letting go of attainment. But you have to know that, which is the trick. Because all kinds of people can walk around saying all life is one. But very few of them know one what. You know? You can't lose your intelligence. Bliss is wonderful. It's impermanent. Just like suffering. Requires conditions to maintain. You grieve and then you're not grieving. You're angry and then you're not angry. This week a friend, next week an enemy. Were you the same in all your memories? Did you start feeling a textural difference when you were going back in time with yourself? Some of you might have. You do this exercise, you will. Start to feel who it was that grew. You'll start to feel why this emotional state, these memories come up. Another emotional state, when you do it another day, different memories come up. What was your face before you were born? Give your flesh back to your mother and your bones back to your father. And who are you then? Who you are now. A continuum consciousness. Desiring happiness, desiring pleasure, and desiring to know. A little mini manifestation, a bit of spray that has from the ocean of consciousness the same attributes, luminosity, pleasure, and knowing. A bit of spray has the same taste as the ocean. Is the spray always going to maintain itself as sprayness? No. Sometimes it'll be river, sometimes it'll be moisture from someone's breath in Tasmania. Sometimes it'll be ice in the Yukon. And it always has the connection to all water.
I guess I'm trying to accommodate how I know that inside me, if there's been a standstill rock in me since I lost the power of my phone, just relating it.
And from this point of view, I can always feel like a self. And boy, you try to kill me, I'll tell you I'll feel like a self, you know. My life's in danger, sick, or, you know, somebody threatens something I love, I love. Boy, that selfing is like, vroom. But it's going to dissolve. Your memories dissolve. So you see, that's where Buddhism goes with it. Everything that is compounded is not an inherent self. What we usually think of as ourselves, says Buddhism, is not a self. It's dependent on circumstance, propensity, or continuum consciousness, if you want to call it that, and aspiration, desire. Yeah, a spray, drop of spray out of the oceanic consciousness of boundless ocean. There's no words for it, so that's why I'm using it.
So is there a similarity there with any Hindu belief
of,
I don't know, a great consciousness?
Yeah, the Atman. Yeah, you could do that if you have a big enough mind. But most of the people that I hear doing it, it's not the experience that I know they're talking about. They're talking about having a right answer so that nothing can touch them. They're not talking about not being separate from anything, which is a different kind of answer. You know why a virgin used to be called a virgin? Like Virgin Mary? Like the great goddesses who were virgins? Because there was no way to make them impure. There was nothing they were separate from. There was no duality within, like that. So how do you get the virgin pregnant without her ceasing to be a virgin? That's the question. How does a virgin give birth to a child? But this is a mystical truth that has to happen in your being. Not someone else who does it for you. These myths are very old and they speak of truth. Yes. Do you have somebody you want to say? Oh, no. You don't, yeah?
No.
Okay.
No.
Oh, God. See, I got to move here for a year or something.
In that exercise we did, with the being, wanting taking that further back before conception?
If you do some work with it, so that you can, yes, there is a lot of point, and you do that, but do some work with it so that you can see many, many threads of a self. Do you understand? Do it so that different emotions come up, so you take different memories. And it's probably a good idea to do it, like, you know, at least once a day, every day, for about 3 months. So you get past the time where your mind has gone shopping and sort of grazing on the familiar pastures. And pass the time where you're bored with it. And then you get to the point where you actually are in another layer of memory. Surprises continuously arise. Like maybe memories that are associated with different sense doors than the ones that came up today. Where your memory actually becomes a living body. Then go back. If it's an exercise, no, don't. I mean, you can, but you're not going to get anything that is trustworthy. You're going to get a nice story, you know.
How do you know it's just a nice story?
How do you know that about now?
Yeah.
The same way. You know the same way. You know, if it actually is pragmatic in your day. You know, if it isn't making you more isolated or needing special cases. That's how you know. You know by the love. If it gets more isolating, more dividing, more I know my previous lifetimes and you don't. You know, or, you know, oh yeah, in a previous lifetime you were out to get me, I remember, I'm going to get you first. Or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. When it's just used as a neurosis, as part of a continuous story of this life, then you know it's not. But if it softens, opens, creates a greater understanding, less separateness, then you know you're... You know by the love. That's the easiest way I can say it. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Yeah. In truth, that's all... The only way we know anything, you know, is by the love. Bad jokes aside. See, you see the glass, you look through the glass and you see the ripples. Do you know why? Because glass is a liquid. It's flowing down. Did you know that? If you turn it around and put it in the other way, it would start flowing the other way. That's why old glass always does that, because it's a liquid. It's just moving real slow. So, you have... Liquid in liquid. That's why it's doing. It's actually thicker when it's doing that. If you measure it, the pain is actually thicker at the bottom than the top. I'm actually not making this up. It's really true.
It also changes the light quite dramatically. It comes through all glass and the patterns that reflect onto the wall.
Yeah.
Compared to that comes through new glass.
Yeah.
Same diffuseness?
It hasn't, yeah.
Yeah,
because the glass hasn't sort of flowed down unevenly.
So if you live in a building that's got all new glass, you know,
yeah. It's true. It's true. Yeah, the more the old glass you got to live with, the prettier the patterns are, honestly. Absolutely. My sentiments exactly. Questions, answers, comments, and complaints.
Could you say a little bit more about luminosity?
I think I would rather beg the question some other time. Is that all right? We've got 10 minutes, and I thought what I would do is quickly describe to you, for example, how you might find for yourself pragmatically to work with compassion rather than do an exercise, because I don't think we really have time. I cut the equanimity one short. But you can see how if you're caught with a lot of desire or hatred, that exercise on equanimity is very useful. Anything, you know. If you find yourself preferring one thing and, you know, and then you're watching your review and you just notice what you like to notice and what you don't.
Isn't that always going to happen, you know? Like, first thing I think of is physical relationships. Then that's, you know, like sexual relationships.
Yeah, and so, yeah. Oh, no, there's a large part of what they're made up of. It's just tricking you while the hormones get on with their business. Yeah. It's a trick. It's fun. I personally think that, you know, you should enjoy the trick, but don't get tricked forever, you know. sometime or other. To them are great in their place, but on the whole and on the half and on the non-whole, I would rather have the insight. Just a little closer, wasn't it? No, he's going, well, let me see on the whole.
Oh, well, I should call it gem of wisdom.
No. You should be curious to see how, you know, how your moods swing with your period. How the desire changes in different cycles. And when you're having your menstrual period, a really nice thing to do, I'm sorry guys, this is just yet one more thing that you don't get to play with in your life, but there you go. You got other things to play with. So... hardly anybody noticed. when you're having your menstrual period, go outside somewhere and sit on the ground and allow that sense of that flow to move right into the center of the earth and offer and connect that. Try it, especially if you have cramps. Make that space. Take a half day off work for mental health. And work with returning energy. Work with returning energy. It's very, very interesting what you can find from doing that kind of thing. So, compassion. Remember something that bugged you about 6 months ago. This is the important part. But which does not any longer. And so therefore, it should be some small thing. Remember it? Remember something that bugged you about 6 months ago, but no longer does. And a small thing. Not a big thing. A minor hitch. Like shoes that were running out or, you know, something. Minor hitch, okay? Let yourself remember when it really, one of the moments that it really bugged you. Really... Let yourself really remember it as if it was just happening now. Bit more. Notice how your body feels as you're remembering it. Fast forward your mind to when it didn't bother you, either you got new shoes or whatever. See how your body feels when you really remember how it didn't bother you. It was solved. Remember when it bothered you again. Go into that feeling. Really let it really build. Notice how it feels. Fast forward to when it doesn't bother you. Notice the sense of spaciousness. Do you notice that? Spacious quality? Go back to when it bothered you one last time. Really let it develop. Now you notice that underneath that bothering you, there is still that spacious quality. That the bothering you is arising in a spacious mind. Like something put on a table, what bothers you is the object, but the spacious quality of mind is like the table. So while you're allowing the bother to be there, focus on the spaciousness. So then with that insight, come into the present and find some minor thing that's bothering you in your life. Imagine in the future when it will not bother you for whatever reason. Feel the spaciousness. Come back to what's bothering you in the present. Bring the spaciousness into it. Then you would allow yourself to think of an acquaintance, not a close friend, an acquaintance, who is caught in something that bothers them. You don't start with major ones, you work your way up. And you allow yourself to feel their sense of being closed in by that. And you allow yourself to imagine when that is no longer bothering them. Then you go back to them in the present and you extend to both of you and them that feeling of that spaciousness of mind, which is always present. That's all the time we have for today. But basically, that's one of the ways of developing the mind of compassion. This compassion, when it's fully developed, becomes boundless space. And then with the Chenrezig practice, so beautifully, so skillfully presented in the Tibetan tradition, you take the space and you use it as different colors of space to operate for different types of suffering. Some types of suffering, if you use this light, it's easier to become aware of the spacious quality of mind. Some type, if you use this light, it's easier. So what the Chenrezig does, it uses different lights and different sounds for different types of ability to let go of the suffering into the totality of consciousness. Not that you're ignoring the suffering, but you have a perspective with it. Okay. So you notice this beautiful gold light in your hearts. Gorgeous dollop of honey. Just spreads through your whole body, down through your arms and legs, moves up through your head, pours out through your pores in every direction, above, below, moves through ceilings and floors, in front, behind, right, left, four quarters. Wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, or mind, this gold light just causes it to temporarily be assuaged. Goes endlessly through the universe, and you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you. Thank you. They're in the center. What was our relationship? What were they doing 3 years before that event? And what was I doing 3 years before that event? And what was our relationship? What were they doing 4 years before that event? What was I doing 4 years before that event. What was our relationship? What were they doing 10 years before that event? What was I doing 10 years before that event? What was our relationship? What were they doing 15 years before that event? What was I doing 15 years before that event? What was our relationship? What were they doing 20 years before that event? What was I doing 20 years before that event? What was our relationship? What were they doing when they were an infant? What was I doing when I was an infant? What was our relationship? What were they doing when they were in the womb? What was I doing when I was in the womb? What was our relationship? Now you allow both those figures to dissolve into light. The light is absorbed into you, through the top of your head, down into your heart. Now you allow yourself to be present in this room again. And you look back. Do a quick review of where you be interested in all of it. Be interested in what memories came up. Also be interested in where your mind did not want to go, where you just went on a holiday. Don't ignore that. That's a very interesting thing when the mind goes on a holiday. Ask, oh, why did I go on a holiday? And then leave it. Don't go poking, okay? Was there a different feeling in the beginning between the enemy and the friend? Was there a different feeling at the end between the enemy and the friend? For some people, you can hang on to it a little better, but... If you do the meditation fully, in the center you have, I'm going to try to fit something else in here so we're not doing it fully. In the center you have a neutral person. One of those people you were talking about, you know. One of those people you like to keep neutral. You don't have any particular personal, you know, like somebody who lives across town at a corner store you occasionally go to. Hi, how are you today? Oh, that's fine. No, see you later. Bye. They're in the center. No, in the center. So you do the friend, you do the enemy, and you do the neutral person. You do them each the same, exactly the same. Sometimes the neutral person becomes the most interesting of the three. Did you choose figures, or were you surprised by who came up?
For the
friend and the enemy.
For the enemy, I chose a person, and then I changed my mind.
Yeah. Isn't that curious? Yeah. You did that too.
It's like 3 weeks down.
Yeah. Isn't that curious?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that curious? But then you didn't have any problem remembering, did you? Isn't that just curious? Isn't the mind a wonderful thing? Did you? It's very curious. To step into your own consciousness, and it's a magical mystery tour. I mean, who are you, anyway?
I'm with a friend that just saying so many times come up when I didn't know what was going on in their life and didn't feel like I'd been a friend at all. But the tie was still there, but it was pretty flimsy.
It was one that you were clinging to rather than there?
No, it was a separation, I guess, and distance.
Not knowing each other. Did you know each other from in the womb?
Oh, no.
So, like I'm saying, you know, you notice that you keep taking this back. One of the things that is almost never practiced anymore, but was very much a part of the Buddhist tradition, was when someone had some meditation experience of depth calm, then a group of people would go away into a forest retreat, and they would trace back memories, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, to birth, into the womb, to conception, and back. And that was what was part of the discipline of the order. To trace the many, many ways that self has been formed. Because who you are habitually thinking of yourself as today, the habits will change in the next circumstance, and another self you will be habitually thinking of, you, identifying, possessing. But you won't even notice, because the sense of an I stays the same. Even when different eyes flash through, it's still I. I am happy, I am sad. But that's not true. It is always different. It isn't rain. It's raining. It's selfing. What is the selfing made of now? Is there more drops here, fewer there? A little warm here, a little cool there. It's very interesting, isn't it? When you swoon out, is because you don't want to know who you are? It's interesting. Refuse to play. I'm taking my marbles and I'm going home. Swoon. Oh, this is a game I'll play. I'm back. Mind the gap. Be really interested in that gap. What? When you gap out. Like you're telling me all about your tie with your friend, and I'm looking at you and saying, oh really? You attached to that, are you? What about before there was the tie? Which you're not talking about. And you're not talking about the enemy. Mind the gap. Mind what you don't like going into. Bring a mind into it. Be conscious in it. You don't have to change your preferences, you just have to be aware. Don't swoon out. Life's too short. You never know when a truck will hit you. Take it from me. You never know. You just feel like you're immortal. A little brain tumor here, a little leprosy there. You just don't know. You just don't know. So that sense of self is dangerous.
What about the essential self, the supposed soul, or, you know, what you're born
with? I'm a Buddhist. I'm a Buddhist. From a Buddhist perspective, it's a really nice idea. It's not my experience. It is really not my experience. I really have other experiences. It's not conceptual. There is a desire to be a self. I recognize it really clearly. I say, "Hello, my name is Cecily," just as if it were. I change it all the time. There is a desire, that's what I mean by like stainless steel, you know, like a little ball bearing that can move through the intestines and come out. You swallow it, comes all the way out. Can move through all the vicissitudes of life and come out, still shining clean, still immaculate, untouched. It's not my experience. But many people have that as a belief. Many people use the teaching of Buddhism without any problem, and no problem for Buddhists either, without being Buddhists, because Buddhism is non-theistic. That means no subject, no object. There is no creator God in Buddhism, because there's no beginning. So you say, from the very no beginning. Yeah? Oh, I never said that, no. Oh, no. What is called the self is made of three things, I said. What did I say? Present supporting circumstances, because a lawyer who's arguing a case in court and a lawyer making love that night with a few drinks of wine is not the same person. Are they? Mm-hmm. They are the same person? Oh. Really? Yeah, I'm looking at it. Doesn't look the same to me. You know. This does not have a fixed identity. I fix its function as its identity because I want a glass. If I want a shower, it changes totally. Doesn't it? I don't know. Now it's an elbow rest.
It's still made of glass and it's still glassy.
It's made of a lot of things besides glass. It's made of space. You know, it's made of a lot of things. You could have a whole history about this glass from its trademark. You could have a chemical analysis of this glass. You could use it as a way to cut through other glass. I have to encourage myself.
I'm just strangely stubborn about it, and I'm not sure why.
No, and that's fine. And that's fine. And that's what I'm saying. That I'm telling you with my full heart, I am a Buddhist. And Buddhism is a non-theistic religion. I was at a conference in Canada a month and a half ago, just 6 weeks ago. It's called the North American Interfaith Network. It was their 10th anniversary conference. I was asked to take part in a panel. There were six of us in this panel. There was an Aboriginal from North America, all women. There was a Hindu. There was a Buddhist. There was a Jew. There was a Christian. And there was a Muslim. The topic was Rediscovering the gift of the universal feminine through faith, scripture, and myth. We each had 10 minutes to address this. I loved it. It was a great exercise. And the conference was so exciting. It was such a joy to be there. These wonderful-hearted people, intelligent people, most of them were pretty intelligent. They weren't your average crowd of people. Most of them were up the upper range of their religious groups, who had a powerful desire to bridge between differences without losing their own sense of belief. It was so exciting. It was so exciting to be in a group of about 700 people, 600 people, who were there because they believed in interfaith dialogue. And that was the whole purpose of it. At various times, I would get into a conversation with a person here or a person there, and then they would say to me something, and then they would ask me what my religious tradition was. I would say, I'm a practicing Buddhist. They would say, oh, well, we all have the same belief in God. And I'd say, well, no, you know, not actually. Because Buddhism is non-theistic. And they turn around. They swoon. They turn around and start talking to the person next to them. Just like, no, not actually, because Buddhism is non-theistic. Just like that. So there's this banquet. I'm sitting at the banquet. There's a chair empty next to me. This woman comes and sits there, and we're talking. She's one of the organizers. She's been involved with organizing the very first of the NANE conferences. This is number 10. This is her passion, her life. She is really interested in interfaith dialogue. They have these all over the world. So every year they have it in a different place. And they do have them all over the world, mostly in North America. Sorry. Okay. She says to me, how are you finding the conference? I say, it's my first one. This is just amazing. It's wonderful. I tell her some of the excitement and the joy I feel about being there, the inspiration that many of the people I'm meeting, you know, they're really wonderful. She says to me, what don't you like about it? I said, well, dislike would be too strong a word. But I find it really interesting that no one knows how to speak to someone who is non-theistic. And she goes... and she's talking, and I go, there you go. And then after about 5 minutes, she turns back. And she says, I don't believe it. You can be religious and non-theistic. And I said, yeah, that's right. That's right, you don't believe that. That's fine. It doesn't mean I don't. So this is interesting. Buddhism is very straightforward. Buddhism says nothing arises without cause. That already sounds like a creator, doesn't it? But it's not. Whatever is causal, whatever arises, is conditioned and therefore impermanent. A creator can't be impermanent. And there is no fixed self to which things happen. Because there is no separateness from everything. Because there is no separateness. It is non-duality. There's non-duality. Buddha was the guy who figured out how to say it this time. There are Buddhas every how many Buddhas are there? There are a whole bunch of Buddhas. There are lots of them. They happen. It takes 3 years to become a Buddha, to become a Sama. It's three kalpas to become a Sama Sambuddhasa. A Sama Sambuddhasa. There, in a grand kalpa, which is more, one kalpa is 320 million years. So it takes three of those cycles to become a Buddha, like Shakyamuni Buddha was. In a grand kalpa, which is an great amount of time, there can be, you know, a Buddha every 5,000 kalpas, 5,000 mini kalpas, quarters of the 320 kalpas. There's different kinds of kalpas. So, and they usually arise all in one part of the kalpa. There is the beginning of a kalpa, which is like a little too confused. The consciousness hasn't settled into an existence, and there's no point in being a Buddha because nobody's going to listen anyway. Then there's the middle of a kalpa, which is a really good time, which is what we're living in. This is considered from a Buddhist point of view and a Hindu point of view to be a very fortunate time, because teachers have been present within living memory. So the last teacher was not around so that you and I could phone him up and say, "Hey, Shakya, what you doing, baby?" But there are oral traditions and living traditions, and there are masters in many religions who are around. Teachers are being born. And there are occasional great teachers. And there is even, from a Buddhist point of view, a Buddha. And how did this Buddha come? Through causes. Nothing arises without cause. It's so sweet. Anyway, so it takes three kalpas. And you have to be prophesied that that's what you're going to do. Some Buddha has to see that that's where you're going to go. From the time of a prophecy of some previous Buddha saying, "Yeah, I think you got, you know, we'll put you down on the list of potential future Buddhas. I think you're going to do it." You know? Then it takes three kalpas from that prophecy. So this could be a few lifetimes, which is why I'm planning one at least as a country and western singer. And one I'll spend with studying clouds. You know, I figure I'll be, you know, so I've got a few worked out to sort of holiday well meditating, you know. It's hard to decide between country and western and opera. See, it's a question between food and sex in my mind, but that's my, that's my conditioned view, so. Probably opera singers have sex, I mean. Just my view. Anyway, where was I? Oh yeah, 320 kalpas. Three kalpas from the time you prophesied. From the time of a prophecy. So, this means only that in order to, and when the Buddha began to teach, when he had the insight that changed his consciousness from being one that clung to relationship and self as reality, to one that was individual rising out of totality, rather than totality riding the waves and trying to maintain a separateness from, individuality trying to maintain a separateness from being swallowed up by totality. But rather than that, individual continuously born out of totality. Right? So that the speech was the speech of totality, which is Sammasambuddhasa. Are you sort of vaguely following what I'm saying? Yeah. Okay. So when he experienced how that should happen, he basically figured it was too simple. Nobody would understand him. Nobody would understand what he was saying, because he was saying, first of all, there is suffering. And most people wanted to say, "And so what do we do with it? How do we get out of it?" And he is not saying that. And Buddhism does not say that. Buddhism says there is dissatisfaction. There is inconvenience. There is pain. It is impossible to to be perfect. There is no perfect stainless self. Why? Because the entire of the manifest is continuously coming into being, existing, and passing away. It is process, not attainment. The attainment is in letting go of attainment. But you have to know that, which is the trick. Because all kinds of people can walk around saying all life is one. But very few of them know one what. You know? You can't lose your intelligence. Bliss is wonderful. It's impermanent. Just like suffering. Requires conditions to maintain. You grieve and then you're not grieving. You're angry and then you're not angry. This week a friend, next week an enemy. Were you the same in all your memories? Did you start feeling a textural difference when you were going back in time with yourself? Some of you might have. You do this exercise, you will. Start to feel who it was that grew. You'll start to feel why this emotional state, these memories come up. Another emotional state, when you do it another day, different memories come up. What was your face before you were born? Give your flesh back to your mother and your bones back to your father. And who are you then? Who you are now, a continuum consciousness, desiring happiness, desiring pleasure, and desiring to know. A little mini manifestation, a bit of spray that has from the ocean of consciousness the same attributes, luminosity, pleasure, and knowing. A bit of spray has the same taste as the ocean. Is the spray always going to maintain itself as sprayness? No. Sometimes it'll be river, sometimes it'll be moisture from someone's breath in Tasmania. Sometimes it'll be ice in the Yukon. And it always has the connection to all water. And from this point of view, I can always feel like a self. And boy, you try to kill me, I'll tell you I'll feel like a self, you know. My life's in danger, sick, or, you know, somebody threatens something I love, I love. Boy, that selfing is like, vroom. But it's going to dissolve. Your memories dissolve. So you see, that's where Buddhism goes with it. Everything that is compounded is not an inherent self. What we usually think of as ourselves, says Buddhism, is not a self. It's dependent on circumstance, propensity, or continuum consciousness, if you want to call it that, and aspiration, desire. Yeah, a spray, drop of spray out of the oceanic consciousness of boundless ocean. There's no words for it, so that's why I'm using it.
Is there a similarity there with, in the Hindu belief of, I mean, I don't know, a great consciousness.
Yeah, the Atman. Yeah, you could do that if you have a big enough mind. But most of the people that I hear doing it, it's not the experience that I know they're talking about. They're talking about having a right answer so that nothing can touch them. They're not talking about not being separate from anything, which is a different kind of answer. You know why a virgin used to be called a virgin? Like Virgin Mary? Like the great goddesses who were virgins? Because there was no way to make them impure. There was nothing they were separate from. There was no duality within. Like that. So how do you get the virgin pregnant without her ceasing to be a virgin? That's the question. How does a virgin give birth to a child? But this is a mystical truth that has to happen in your being. Not someone else who does it for you. These myths are very old, and they speak of truth. Yes. Do you have something you want to say? Oh, no. You don't, yeah?
No.
Okay.
No.
Oh, God. I think I've got to move here for a year or something. If you do some work with it so that you can, yes, there is a lot of point and you do that, but do some work with it so that you can see many, many threads of a self. Do you understand? Do it so that different emotions come up, so you take different memories. And it's probably a good idea to do it like, you know, at least once a day, every day for about 3 months. So you get past the time where your mind has gone shopping and sort of grazing on the familiar pastures, and past the time where you're bored with it, and then you get to the point where you actually are in another layer of memory. Surprises continuously arise, like maybe memories that are associated with different sense doors than the ones that came up today, where your memory actually becomes a living body. Then go back. If it's an exercise, no, don't. I mean, you can, but you're not going to get anything that is trustworthy. You're going to get a nice story, you know.
How do you know if it's just a nice story?
How do you know that about now?
Yeah.
The same way. You know the same way. You know, if it actually is pragmatic in your day. You know, if it isn't making you more isolated or needing special cases. That's how you know. You know by the love. If it gets more isolating, more dividing, more I know my previous lifetimes and you don't. You know, or, you know, oh yeah, in a previous lifetime you were out to get me, I remember, I'm going to get you first, or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. When it's just used as a neurosis, as part of the continuous story of this life, then you know it's not. But if it softens, opens, creates a greater understanding, less separateness, then you know you're... You know by the love. That's the easiest way I can say it. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
In truth, that's all the only way we know anything. You know, it's by the love. Bad jokes aside. See, you see the glass, you look through the glass and you see the ripples. Do you know why? Because glass is a liquid. It's flowing down. Did you know that? If you turn it around and put it in the other way, it would start flowing the other way. That's why old glass always does that, because it's a liquid. It's just moving real slow. So you have liquid in liquid. That's why it's doing. It's actually thicker when it's doing that. If you measure it, the pain is actually thicker at the bottom than the top. I'm actually not making this up. It's really true.
It also changes the light quite dramatically that comes through old glass and the patterns that are reflected onto a wall.
Yeah.
Compared to that comes through new glass.
Yeah.
Doesn't have the same diffuseness?
It hasn't, yeah. Yeah, because the glass hasn't sort of flowed down unevenly.
So if you live in a building that's got all new glass, you know,
yeah. It's true. It's true. Yeah, the more the old glass you got to live with, the prettier the patterns are on the floor. Absolutely. My sentiments exactly. Questions, answers, comments, and complaints.
Could you say a little bit more about luminosity?
I think I would rather beg the question some other time. Is that all right? Yeah. We've got 10 minutes, and I thought what I would do is quickly describe to you, for example, how you might find for yourself pragmatically to work with compassion rather than do an exercise, because I don't think we really have time. I cut the equanimity one short. But you can see how if you're caught with a lot of desire or hatred, that exercise on equanimity is very useful. Anything, you know. If you find yourself preferring one thing and, you know, and then you're watching your review and you just notice what you like to notice and what you don't.
Isn't that always going to happen? You know, first thing I think of is physical relationships. You know, like sexual relationships.
Yeah, and so, yeah. Oh, no, there's a large part of what they're made up of. It's just tricking you while the hormones get on with their business. You know. It's a trick. It's fun. I personally think that, you know, you should enjoy the trick, but don't get tricked forever, you know, sometime or other.